Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is Sirius XM Progress, and you made it to Friday night. I'm John Fugelsang, so happy to be here with you on Channel 127. For the next 3 hours, we'll be coming at you at 866-997-4748. We're going to be talking with Lindsay Schubiner from the Western States Center all about those super racist extremists and how much power they have in our government, despite their numbers not being proportionate. TV's Frank Conniff of Mystery Science Theater 3000 will be here in hour number two. We got a great show planned tonight. We're at 866-997-4748, and we'd love to have you join us. 866-997-GRIT. Our show is executive produced by Chris Hauselt. The mighty Thea Harper is producing our show out of Brooklyn. I come to you from Manhattan. We are so glad you are with us. Let's do a show. It's really good to be with you all. I got to say, I'm a little discombobulated. I'm just kind of outraged. I can't believe Joe Biden would deliberately schedule a solar eclipse on the Buddha's birthday. That's Monday. What a monster! How could he do that? It's also Biz Markie's birthday. How can Joe Biden live with himself scheduling these things at the same time? We right now, friends, are in a period where Mercury's in retrograde. In New York City, in 1 week, we're having flooding, an earthquake, and an eclipse. And what are all these locusts doing in my neighborhood? First off, New York was flooding during the week. It was pouring down rain. None of that prepared us for today's nice weather or the 4.8 magnitude earthquake that rattled Jersey and New York, and I had friends in Philly who felt it. About 42 million people over several states felt it today, even hundreds of miles away from the epicenter near Lebanon, New Jersey. We all wanted to believe it was coming directly from Bedminster, because that would be a sign that Ivana had left the crypt and was coming back for her earthly revenge. You know, if they had an earthquake that was 4.8 in L.A., it wouldn't be that big a deal. It also wouldn't have been felt that far away, because the rock in the eastern United States is actually older than the rock in the western United States. Earthquakes are much less common on the East Coast, which I'm sure you knew. This is the strongest earthquake to hit near New York City, apparently in 140 years. The U.S. Geological Survey logged 160,000 reports on its website from panicked residents in the quake's aftermath. That is a potential new record. Governor Kathy Hochul said this is one of the largest earthquakes on the East Coast in the last century. In fact, more than that, the last time an earthquake with a magnitude anywhere close to 5 struck anywhere near the city of New York was back in 1884. The year the Statue of Liberty arrived in our harbor, and that quake was mostly centered in Brooklyn. Even the quake knew that was going to be the hip neighborhood. There was a 5.8 quake that we felt here back in 2011, but that started in Virginia, and I didn't feel it. This one today, I felt. And honestly, I've lived in Los Angeles for years. I've lived through many earthquakes. It's always a strange phenomenon. Today, I had no idea it was an earthquake. I was sitting in the kitchen doing some notes before going on Stephanie Miller this morning. It was about 10:23. And normally they allow me on the Miller Show around 10:30, and then they're showing me the door around 10:33 most days. But I was getting ready, and the whole living room started to vibrate. And I just thought, oh, there must be a very large truck outside, like a garbage truck or a cement mixer, maybe going through a very deep, long pothole. But the cats didn't get upset, you know? In L.A., whenever there was going to be an earthquake, the cats would go crazy. By the time I moved out of L.A., I could guess an earthquake was coming if the cats just lost it. The cats slept through it. They're lazy. But it was mild. There are no reported injuries. And they said that at least two aftershocks have been recorded over the course of the day. No reports of damages either. So that's great. Thousands of earthquakes with magnitudes of 2.0 or greater have occurred in New York State over the past couple of centuries. There is a 20 to 40% chance of a 5.2 magnitude earthquake happening in the next 50 years. And catastrophic events with magnitudes 6 and larger are possibilities. But let's see how November goes. And then there's the eclipse. Perhaps you've heard about that. It's going to be cloudy. But if you plan to be one of the millions of people looking up at the sky during the total solar eclipse this coming Monday afternoon, please, please protect your eyes. You can wear certified eclipse glasses. You can make one of those little pinhole projectors. I know they don't really work in a good way. They're not that fun, but Google it. It's easy to do. The total solar eclipse is going to take place at the moon's ascending node. My wife told me that. She's from California. On Monday. And you'll see it across North America. And the moon will pass between the Earth and the sun. So for a few minutes, it'll obscure the image of the sun. You know what an eclipse is. You've seen Apocalypto. It's very rare that this kind of total eclipse occurs. And it's going to be a very narrow part across the Earth's surface. It's going to be a few thousands of miles wide. And this is going to be one day after the perigee. That's on Sunday. The moon's apparent diameter will be 5.5% larger than average. So this will be the first total solar eclipse to be visible in Canada since 1979, the first in Mexico since 1991, and the first here in the U.S. since August 21st, 2017. This will be the only total solar eclipse in the entire 21st century where totality will be visible in Mexico, the U.S., and Canada. I'm sure we'll find a way to fight over it anyway. And it's going to be the last total solar eclipse visible in the 48 United States until August 23rd, 2044. So the final solar eclipse of the year is going to happen October 2nd, 2024. So we're going to have a partial lunar eclipse in September, and we'll have our annual solar eclipse again on October 2nd. So get ready for that. Meanwhile, President Biden traveled today to Baltimore, not to get ready for the eclipse. And I hope you're excited for the eclipse. I just had to order a bunch of very expensive 3D goggles on Amazon for my child, because now it's a school assignment. It is supposed to be cloudy in a lot of the country, but I hope you get to see it. Anyway, so Biden went to Baltimore to observe the aftermath and the recovery efforts of the Key Bridge collapse. Give a listen to this. I thought it was a pretty good speech that the media did not cover much today, but he promised a very strong rebound for one of America's oldest and most important ports.
This port is over 300 years old. As a matter of fact, as I said, my great-great-grandfather worked here as a waterman in this bay. This port is older than our republic, and it's been through tough times before. During the War of 1812, a young Marylander named Francis Scott Key, to whom the bridge is named after, sat in a boat in this very harbor, and he watched. He watched the British troops launch an attack after attack on American forces. But as the dawn broke, we saw the American flag still flying. Baltimore was still standing, and our nation, as he rode in the Star-Spangled Banner, had made it through a perilous fight. Folks, this is going to take time, but Governor Moore, Senator Cardin, Senator Van Hollen, Congressman Fumi, Mayor Scott, County Executive Johnny O, and others are going to rebuild this bridge. as rapidly as possible.
You know, 81-year-old guy with a stutter. It's fine. He's fine. But you wouldn't know it from social media. And today we learned that covert Chinese accounts are masquerading online as American supporters of Trump and promoting a lot of conspiracy theories and stoking those divisions we Americans love so much and attacking Biden all over social media before the election. This is according to various researchers and government officials. It's a tactical shift in how Beijing is trying to influence our election. And it shows, like Russia, they really want Donald Trump back. I mean, it's amazing how many dictators really want the malleable Donald Trump, who anyone can manipulate with a compliment, back in office. Keep in mind, when Donald Trump was president, he had a secret Chinese bank account and was secretly paid by the Chinese government. This is something that our media should be screaming about. If it was true of Obama, he would have been put in jail retroactively. So they want him back. They, and so does Russia, and so does Saudi Arabia, and so does Hungary, and so does North Korea. The worst, shittiest dictators are doing everything they can do to interfere in our election as much as they can. Some of the Chinese accounts impersonate Trump fans. There was one on Twitter that was a father, husband, and son who was MAGA all the way, according to the New York Times. They mock Biden's age. They show fake pictures of him in prison. They claim that he was a Satanist pedophile, and they talk about how great Trump is. And this is all over Facebook. It's all over Twitter. And again, it shows that China wants Trump to win this year, along with all the other dictatorships. You know, this is just coming a couple of hours after we get a little bit of progress with Israel, hopefully. I've been very harsh on the president this week, and a lot of you have been very harsh on the president this week. We know now that about 3 hours after his phone call between Biden and Netanyahu yesterday, which I was very cynical about, Chris and I were talking a lot about words, thoughts and prayers and words, but Israel's cabinet approved new steps to increase the flow of humanitarian aid to Gaza. Now, this will not be covered much on the news, but the U.S. asked Israel to implement these steps months ago. Netanyahu does not want to. He wants to starve them out. That is still the only reason why they would deliberately murder the World Central Kitchen staff. Earlier today at the United Nations, Israeli Representative Gilad Erdan promised that the killing of the World Central Kitchen staff is being investigated. And even though they were being escorted by the IDF and their movements were coordinated and three individual drones sequentially blew up all three of their cars, it's not going to happen again.
This incident has been thoroughly investigated, and the findings show that this strike was carried out due to a misidentification at night during a war under very complex conditions. The incident was investigated by an independent expert body and was completed last night. The findings were presented both to Israeli leadership and WCK officials before being released to the public. As a result, two senior military officers have already been dismissed from their posts. Israel has coordinated aid distribution with international...
We can fade it out. So in other words, it was a complete accident. We did nothing wrong. And we've already fired two people. A couple of hours before the cabinet meeting, Biden gave Netanyahu an ultimatum. Either do something different with this humanitarian crisis, or we will change our policy regarding the war. Now, this makes me nuts, because it's still so vague. Apparently, Netanyahu came to the meeting with Biden with a list of steps, and he told the president he would approve them. And we actually got some real news. A senior Netanyahu aide later told reporters the security cabinet approved the opening of the Erez crossing in the northern Gaza Strip for the first time in almost 6 months. All right, that's a little bit. But these people are being deliberately starved, because ghouls like Jared Kushner want to build luxury resorts over the bones of dead children. Palestinian UN rep Riyad Mansour told the council cruel and needless deaths like those of the World Central Kitchen staff are neither new nor rare during Israel's war on Hamas.
The killing of the aid workers from the World Central Kitchen is not an isolated incident. It is confirmation of what you all knew for months now. Israel is targeting those that the laws of war were established to protect. Israel knew very well who it was targeting, hitting three cars in three locations, despite the fact that they were identifiable and had coordinated with Israel the delivery of aid. It says it suspected one person, so it killed many. Never mind distinction, precautions, proportionality, protected status, never mind human decency.
Okay, it is unfortunate that it
took the killing.
This is the part of the show where I have to remind you that Hamas are Nazi terrorist bastards. And just because Netanyahu is a bloody awful genocidal murderer, we should not forget that Hamas are also awful, bloody genocidal. You get it? Now, the story that our media is going to care about all weekend, The Rock. Yes, we saved the deepest for last. So The Rock thought it would be a good idea to promote his return to WrestleMania for a special to go on Fox News. How are you going to get him to talk about your WrestleMania special, Rock? What are you going to do? I mean, they you don't have any movies coming out. Jungle Cruise 2. So he thought, I'm going to go on Fox News. I'm going to talk to Will Kane, my old buddy, who never met a black person he didn't mind calling thug. I'm sorry, but he said he regretted endorsing Joe Biden. The endorsement that I made years ago with Biden was one I thought was the best decision for me at the time. I realize now going into this election, I will not do that. My goal is to bring this country together. He said that the Biden president is so it's like, all right, well, dude, you could have just gone on and promoted your fake wrestling show and not said you're not endorsing Biden. But no. He went on and said he regretted endorsing Biden. Now, he didn't say he was endorsing Trump, but he endorsed Trump. When you go on Fox News and talk to Will Kane and say it was wrong of me to endorse Biden, and you say that Biden has sown division in the country without saying how, and you talk about cancel culture, woke culture, this culture, that culture, and say it really bugs you, without saying what this division is, you're getting votes for Trump. You are endorsing Trump. And I'm sorry, that's what it was. He could have just gone on and promoted his shitty fake wrestling special instead. He didn't have to say anything. He was promoting a fake wrestling show. The man is very okay with a Trump presidency. If you go on Fox News and say that you're not endorsing anyone this year, but you really regret endorsing Joe Biden last time because of all the division he's caused in this culture, and you don't like cancel culture and woke culture, you're endorsing Trump, which means The Rock, at least at the very least, finds Trump acceptable because he's not going to speak out against him. So what this means is The Rock is OK with a national abortion ban. He regrets endorsing Joe Biden. He's not going to say anything that would endorse anyone this year. But Biden's divided the country and he doesn't like woke. That's a Trump commercial. And they will air it over and over again on Fox. The Rock is totally cool with a national abortion ban and with Project 2025. The Rock is just fine with Trump's promise of mass deportation camps. He's down with Christian nationalism. It's okay. The destruction of Ukraine, abandoning NATO, rolling back civil rights protections, especially for trans kids. The Rock, he's not going to say a thing to prevent tariff wars or persecuting trans people, persecuting immigrants, dismantling the advantages we made in renewables. Donald Trump keeps talking about bombing Mexico to stop fentanyl. Rock's not going to say anything against that. Muslim ban? The Rock is fine with a Muslim ban. The Rock is fine with a day one dictator. The Rock was fine with the script to Black Adam. I think that's all you need to know. Oh, he's also seriously okay with another deep tax cut for his particular bracket. I'd like to say I'm really disappointed with The Rock, but I didn't really expect much from The Rock. I expected more from a country where we are made to care about the political feelings of fake wrestlers. We want to know what you guys think. We are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Let me go for a really quick call before the break. Pastor John in Connecticut on line 4. Thank you so much for waiting on hold. Sure. You're on Sirius XM.
Hey there, John. What you just got finished saying would be a wonderful commercial for the Democrats. You know, I want to give you an update. I'm asking the callers, if you would, call all your Democratic senators and congresspeople to posthumously give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to all the people who died for the right to vote, with Mrs. Luizio, Viola Luizio, white woman, gave her life. Mm-hmm. William Moore, white man, gave his life. Reverend James Reed, white man, gave his life. Mr. Yep. and Mrs. Harry Moore gave their lives. Yes. Other thing is, we need President Biden to get the police unions that support him together and bring back the assault weapons ban, have Bill Clinton out there with him, okay, and talk about Bill Clinton's ban from 1994, which did prevent murders in schools, and remind the people that the Republican Party and George Bush, the son, allowed it to expire. The other thing is, I don't know if you've seen the ad of Anthony Beshear, the governor, the whole ad. We need to start playing that on the radio.
The one where the
12-year-old, she's not 12 anymore, but when she was 12, she was raped by her stepfather.
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay?
Yes, sir, I've seen it.
The Democrats, need to change the word from the guy he was running against to the Republicans, and then say the Republicans are against IVF, they're against families, they're against you having kids, as well as once the kids are born, they're against that. And the other thing is,
they got to hire you to write, Pastor.
No, they need to hire you and just listen to your show. You've got everything that needs to be done. They need to remind the kids, the young people, that we have an American climate corpse. Tell us how it's doing. Update things. And they need President Biden needs to come out to your show and Dean's show.
We're working on getting the White House people on this show. Believe me, we are working on it any way we can blackmail them. Thank you, Pastor John. It's a pleasure to hear from you. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back with Lindsay Schubiner of the Western State Center and your calls in just a moment. Frank Conniff in hour two. This is Progress. Don't go away.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Now, as you guys may have heard, earlier this week, there was a Trump event in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they called it Biden's Border Bloodbath. And it turns out the RNC has a new favorite word, and they just launched a website called BidenBloodbath.com to track crimes allegedly committed by immigrants, be they undocumented or otherwise. It's the increasingly violent, increasingly dehumanizing, increasingly fear-provoking language they use around immigration. Anything they can do to dehumanize immigrants the way previous fascist regimes have dehumanized minorities they didn't like. And we've talked a lot about how Donald Trump is pulling directly out of old Adolf's playbook with language like infestation, poisoning the blood, vermin, animals, etc. I want to remind you, only one of the candidates running for president this year, of all the parties, of only one of the candidates, including all the third party guys, only one of the candidates has hired undocumented immigrants to avoid paying American workers a living wage in two different centuries. Only one person running for president this year has been fined for employing undocumented immigrants. It's Donald Trump. So keep that in mind, because I'm so pleased to welcome back Lindsay Schubiner. Now, the Western State Center is a non-governmental nonprofit based in the Pacific Northwest and Mountain States, and it works to counter right-wing extremism and strengthen a more inclusive democracy. Ms. Schubiner is Western State Center's director of programs, and they counter this ascension of white nationalism across the country. Previously, she led advocacy efforts against anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim bigotry at the Center for New Community. She's provided commentary for PBS NewsHour, the New York Times, and The New Yorker. We are always thrilled to welcome back Lindsay Schubiner. Hello and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Thank you. I'm sorry that the circumstances that we have to discuss are so scary, but this reality show landlord, Donald Trump, keeps on painting a more and more dystopian portrait of America, which means, of course, a relentless focus on migrant crime and whatever stunts he can do to spotlight the situation at the border. I don't like calling it a crisis, because it's man-made, it's preventable, they could stop it right now, and crisis is one side's propaganda. Of course, Donald Trump's ignoring the fact that violent crime is substantially lower now than it was his last year in office, but we should be ready for a lot more of this, shouldn't we? This will be a nonstop focus on the border and demonizing brown people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredibly troubling to see this rhetoric, right? In Ohio last month, Trump said if he doesn't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath, right? And we've seen this bloodbath rhetoric echoed from the Republican Party to target Biden's immigration policies, but also immigrants as a whole. And its significance is more than a political tool, right? It's the kind of rhetoric that can lead to violence, that threatens violence, in fact, and that is incredibly dehumanizing, as the other rhetoric that you mentioned. And that's these are hallmarks of what academics call dangerous speech that can lead to violence and genocide, even. And dehumanization is the key part of that. We also, are tracking narratives that make people feel threatened, right? Which can play a similar role.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole name of the game, right? I mean, this is the time when Donald Trump turns his dog whistle to a train whistle. And let's not forget, he was fired from his reality show for this kind of racist rhetoric against immigrants. And I mean, we can go through all the different instances of racist comments against immigrants. Two-thirds of his wives have been immigrants, but, this is what we should be prepared for. Let me ask you, this seems to work really well with one group, people who already support Donald Trump. I mean, I talk a lot about how they're not trying to expand their playing field or cast a wider net at all. What does it say that this relentless focus on fear-mongering about brown people at our border, despite crime rates being lower now, despite Donald Trump's record of hiring these people, what does it say that it failed as a campaign issue in 2020, that it failed in 2022?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, we consistently see anti-immigrant bigotry rise when it's election time, right? Tied to election cycles. And that's because they're trying to, gin up their base, make people upset. But, I think that there are other issues at play, and not everyone is going to fall for it. The majority of Americans believe in inclusive democracy, want to live with respect for their neighbors, and reject, overtly bigoted rhetoric. And that's really important to remember. And, I think I hope that we see increasing numbers of elected officials calling out this bigoted and violent rhetoric for what it is and rejecting it. Because I think when you when you name these things and when you name their impact and frame it in terms of values, right? When you talk explicitly about what your values are and what they aren't, that's a powerful, that can be a powerful mobilizer as well.
You're right. So let me ask you, Ms. Schubiner, what should we make of the fact that so much of the political rhetoric we're hearing from our friends on the right is more and more mirroring the language of the white nationalists you cover and the great replacement theory? You know, 40 years ago, Ronald Reagan and George Bush ran for president in 1980, both of them competing over who would be the most friendly to immigrants and who would give amnesty. And they did. It was incredible to watch two Republicans campaign to welcome these people. It's a completely different party in just 44 years, where now the party line is Democrats are inviting these people into the country illegally so they can make them citizens and win elections. Never minding how silly that is, how many of these people are Catholic and might not vote for the Democratic agenda. This is they will not replace us. This is the white supremacist replacement theory, and it hasn't become more marginalized in the last 2 years. We're seeing Elon Musk repeating it all the time, a lot of very mainstream conservative media figures, and of course, a lot of politicians who do know better. What do you make of the fact that this language has gone so mainstream, and is it in fact dangerous, or is this the sort of thing that progressive people just get their Irish up about?
Oh, it's incredibly dangerous, right? This is the kind of language, as I said, you know, we're seeing hallmarks of dangerous speech that can contribute to violence, that can even lead to genocide. And we've seen this kind of rhetoric cited by mass shooters from El Paso to Pittsburgh as the sort of, you know, ideas behind their violence. So it's incredibly dangerous. And it's one of the things that honestly keeps me up at night, seeing how mainstreamed this bigotry has become. Because, you know, I think to understand where we are, we also have to look back. And it's an enormous victory of the anti-immigrant movement, which was founded decades ago by a white nationalist named John Tanton, right, who was obsessed with demographics and maintaining a white majority. And he created this, you know, this series of organizations to mainstream anti-immigrant bigotry and anti-immigrant policies. And we've seen the GOP really adopt those policies almost wholesale in recent years, with just a few exceptions. So sorry about that.
That's OK. Are you at all surprised that we haven't seen this issue divide the Republican Party more? I mean, we're getting a whole lot of congressmen dropping out and announcing they're not running for re-election, sometimes making it very inconvenient for their caucus. But we're not hearing a ton of Republicans pushing back against white nationalism.
Yeah, it's you know, it's not surprising, but it's incredibly disappointing. And, you know, I think sometimes the mainstreaming and normalization of, you know, these overt forms of racism and bigotry feel, you know, overwhelming and like a force that it's hard to stand up against. But these are social norms and political norms. And, you know, just as these, you know, movements have promoted their bigotry, there are tons of opportunities for each and every one of us to push back against them in our communities, by talking to our neighbors, and by working within the organizations that we're already part of, whether it's a neighborhood group, whether it's a social services agency, whether it's local government or someplace we're volunteering, right? Everybody has a stake in pushing back against bigotry and in defending our inclusive democracy. And, you know, speaking out, making public statements, only supporting elected officials who are willing to speak out against bigotry are all really important ways that that we can push back against that kind of normalization.
I agree. And as we see all these very dangerous attempts to mainstream extremism and take these ideas and make them seem very commonplace, what kind of grade do you give the mainstream media in covering this? I mean, it certainly seems like the media's not really asking the tough questions or expressing much outrage about all this.
Yeah, I think, you know, many outlets have struggled to cover this normalization, just like they in many ways struggled to figure out the right way to cover Trump's ascendance initially. And we've seen really problematic things like media outlets platforming members of the anti-immigrant movement without identifying them as such, or sometimes uncritically repeating this language without looking at the facts, right? Particularly the anti-immigrant narrative about criminality, right? We see that repeated a lot, even though it's factually unsupported. When you look at rates of crime, immigrants compared to U.S. born citizens.
That's right. Both legal and illegal immigrants commit crimes at a much lower rate than natural born citizens.
Right. But it's not even about the facts, right? Because they're, anti-immigrant rhetoric is operating in a sphere of misinformation and disinformation. And so we have to counter it with values and, throw in some facts when we can. But it's really about asking the question of sort of who we want to be as a nation.
You had a great line about Speaker of the House Mike Johnson earlier this year. You said it's a troubling sign for our democracy that Congress has elevated into leadership someone who has consistently mainstreamed bigoted conspiracy theories. I agree. And it sort of seems like they were out of options. It sort of seems like the Republican Party is, in a way, held hostage. They have to be able to service the bigoted conspiracy theory part of the party while still trying to be a functioning party of adults. And it seems like Speaker Johnson has been walking this very line.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And, we've seen a lot of Republicans, retire from the party or leave the party if they're not, able or willing to go along with the, conspiracist and bigoted bent that the party has taken. And it's, I think it's a serious question for all of us about, who we want our leaders to be and whether they believe in democracy.
So how do you feel like all these anti-democracy antics by the GOP are going to affect the 2024 primary? From where you sit and the kind of extremists that you study, what are your greatest concerns about a potential second Trump term? What would it look like?
Well, I think, I think we have to, for every politician, we have to look with clear eyes about what they say they're going to do and take them seriously about that. Right. And as I said before, right, what Trump said just last month is that if he doesn't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. I think we certainly know what the last what his last term was like. And, I think we should take that seriously and take his words seriously. And, yes. I think this election is happening in an atmosphere of increasing authoritarianism, both in the U.S. and globally. And that's having a big impact and is something that, that everyone, that all of us invested in democracy need to take really seriously.
You said that claims that insurrectionists are political prisoners is a way of deflecting accountability, of building political support, and maybe most importantly, a way of normalizing violence against American institutions and our democracy itself. My final question, Ms. Schubiner, would be, do you feel that his embrace of these terrorists, calling them hostages, along with his many impending criminal trials and the likelihood he will be a convicted criminal by the time we get to the Republican convention, do you see that having an impact on his base? Do you see that having an impact on the undecideds? Or is this thing cooked as the media seems to think it is?
I think what we're seeing is, the impact of a very explicit and intentional strategy from anti-democracy movements and actors to undermine democratic institutions, to undermine the rule of law, and to offer an alternative in many cases that is steeped in authoritarianism. And it's that's something I think that's the lens that I look at what's happening through is, you know, what does this mean for our institutions? What does this mean for our democracy? And we see them doing things like threatening and harassing community leaders and elected officials and pushing them out of their leadership roles, right? That has a chilling effect on how people participate in their communities and in their institutions. So these strategies go all the way from the federal level down to the local community level, where many more people can have an impact, you know, even just by supporting people who are institutions who are being targeted, from our libraries to our schools to local elected officials.
Amen. I love how you always take the macro and bring it down to the local level. Lindsay Schubner is Western State Center's Director of Programs, which counter the dangerous ascension of white nationalism across our country. What is the best way, Ms. Schubner, for our listeners to follow you and keep up with your work and the work of Western State Center?
Our website is westernstatecenter.org, and we are also on Twitter and Instagram. So we take a look and look at our tools for communities to take action.
Thank you for the work you do, and thank you so much for joining us here.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great one. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment with your calls. We are at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. We are at 866-997-4748. Let's go back to the phones because some of y'all are being so patient. Jim in Michigan, thank you so much. On line 5, you're on Progress.
I am a rock.
Then you feel no pain.
All right. And an island, too. Say, we have a little town about 30 miles away from my house. You can barely see a couple residential streets from the 2-lane, 55-mile-an-hour state road, but evidently the town is called Nirvana.
Oh, cool.
And we would drive there frequently down to the university 100 miles away where most of my sibs and I went to school and so forth. And, you know, we kind of knew what Nirvana meant, but we didn't know the group or anything. And all of a sudden, the signs started getting stolen frequently.
Hmm.
And so now that I think about it, I think it was like in the early 90s when that started happening. And now I'm putting it all together, but they gave up replacing that sign.
Hmm.
So anyway, I was
not a big surprise.
I told your screener that I was going to talk about Iraq and Gaza.
Okay.
And so I was going to say, John, how do you win a war? And but I thought, you know what? That's a little beaten up. But I do want to compliment you on how you the rhetoric that was used in that discussion and how you turned it around to put Jesus commandments of welcoming the stranger and so forth in there.
Which discussion, my friend? Which discussion, sir?
It was a discussion you were having with the guy that was arguing with you about how you won a war and basically saying that we should starve the people to death in Gaza or whatever needs to be done.
That was when Kendall from two nights ago. We're still getting calls about Kendall. This is why I love when these racists call us. They're so good.
Yeah.
We need more of these racists, Chris.
But then you went to metaphor and said, does getting to heaven through Jesus mean physically getting through Jesus, or is it a metaphor?
Yes.
And then you made it into, you know, to go through Jesus, you had to do Jesus' stuff. So that was pretty good. But what I really wanted to talk about with both Gaza and Ukraine, bribes.
Please.
Bribes. Think out of the box. Who in the hell can we bribe? Remember the sons of Iraq?
Bribes are the only way we kept the peace in Afghanistan all those years. We bribed everybody. I had friends from school who served there. I asked them. They said, yes, everybody was bribed. Afghanistan's not a real country. The British decided it was, doesn't make it one. And bribes have traditionally been the way our military has kept the peace. And we don't talk about it too much. But
bribes to tribes. And we did the sons of Iraq in Iraq. They were many of them were the insurgents, the disaffected elite troops of Saddam. And so all of a sudden we gave them money to keep the peace, and the peace was kept. And then when we left, the folks that took over stopped paying the sons of Iraq. And so what did they do? They became a chunk of ISIL or ISIS.
Yeah.
And so anyway, getting back to the story, whatever we've got, Hamas, are they Sunnis or Shiites? Can we do virgins? I mean, we got billions of dollars. We could pay some virgins to handle those dudes, get them all.
Well, I mean, but the whole problem is, Hamas is not the kind of situation, and I don't like Hamas. They're very evil. You can't bribe them.
You got to say that or else somebody's anti-Semitic.
You can't bribe Hamas. They're not in it for the money. Believe me, and the guy who is their boss has billions already. This is about the way the Palestinian people are going to live under Israeli occupation. And until that is resolved, you're going to see more violence. It doesn't matter if you kill every member of Hamas.
Okay,
it used to be the PLO when I was a kid. These terrorists keep changing their names. You drive one out, another one's going to pop up because, again, we're attacking the symptoms of the problem, not the problem.
True. Yeah, you're right. And that's the way it is here in America with our border also.
That's the way it is here in America with everything. Everything. We don't attack problems. We fight, you know, we don't prevent unwanted pregnancy. We fight over abortion. We don't prevent poverty. We fight crime. We don't prevent the conditions that lead to terrorism. We fight terrorists.
Yeah, Kendall liked to talk over you, John, in a real mean way. I hope that when I talk over you, I don't do it in a real mean way.
Not at all, sir. And I hope when I talk over you that you can feel free to tell me to shut up if I get too much in there.
No,
but this is what we do. Look at American healthcare. We don't. Go ahead, please.
The other Jesus thing is love of money is the root of all evil. And you can throw power in there, too, if you want to. But they're all pretty fairly well interrelated.
Mm hmm.
Money and power. So
that's actually Paul who said that. It's actually Paul who said that, not Jesus. But I agree with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've always been kind of anti-Paul, but
he has his moments. But I don't follow him.
I haven't read much. I'm afraid to read the Bible much anymore because I go down all these freaking sidetracks and want to study history of this or that.
What's wrong with that? That's fun. The Bible's an awesome thing to geek out on. The poetry's great. And the thing about the Bible is whatever you want to see, you will see. If you want to see women treated as dirt, it's there. And if you want to see women uplifted and celebrated, it's there. If you want to see violence and rape and incest and exploitation, it's all in there. And if you want to see forgiveness and grace, that's all there too. Problem is, the people who are the loudest Jesus followers tend to not read the Jesus parts all that much.
No, they don't. But, you know, Jesus was the person who got pissed off. Remember the tree?
Mm-hmm.
The fig tree?
He killed
tree?
The tree. He cursed the tree.
He said, "You fucking tree, die, bitch." And then he came back.
It's a very weird story.
And the fucking tree was dead. And it wasn't even in season for the olives, the figs to be ripe is what I got on the street.
I actually think that tree is supposed to be metaphor. That whole story. But yes, I'm with you.
Okay, well, let's talk about the hogs.
Okay,
he cast out some demons, and there
were
2,000 hogs. Ran off a cliff. Think of all
that
ham all over the place, man.
And I know, and for Jews, what are you supposed to do with that?
Well, it said it was an area where Gentiles lived, and I got to thinking, well, when you read the Bible, you're thinking that everybody's Jewish or Roman or whatever, and wait a minute, there's enough Gentiles around to have a herd of 2,000 hogs?
I mean, it's all bizarre, you know, but I mean, this is the story where this actually influenced Exorcist, because in The Exorcist 2, which is the worst movie ever made, you learn the name of the demon, and Exorcist 3, they're called Legion. And in the Bible, it's a multitude of demons who have a collective name of Legion. This man is possessed by all these demons, and they're just called Legion. And so they're afraid that the demons are going to leave him and be in the earth. And so Jesus throws them into this herd of pigs, and then the pigs run into the sea and drown themselves. It is one of those what-the-fuck Bible moments.
Right, but Legion means the Roman Legion, right, which is 6,000.
It means fighting. Many. It means many.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the stories. I mean, Jesus, he pulled some shit. The other thing I don't like about Jesus.
Yes. Okay.
A man can put his wife away for adultery, but there's nothing in there that a woman can do if her husband is an adulterer.
That's true. But can I give you the flip side of it? Because it's actually, I think that Jesus, when you put it in context, is the biggest feminist in the entire Bible, because a man can get rid of his wife under the Moses divorce law anytime he wants. And keep in mind, you can rape a woman and then she has to marry you. And right. Deuteronomy has that. And then if you no longer delight in her, you kick her to the curb. And back then in first century Holy Land, if you're a woman whose husband kicks you to the curb, women don't work. Women don't get education. Your only options are to find family who will take you in, become a prostitute, or live on the margins of society trying to survive. Being divorced was for many a death sentence in the society. So for Jesus to come out and first tell off all the guys for their sexual harassment of women, when he says, you look with lustful looks, you've already committed adultery in your heart, he's telling them not to be douchebags. And then he changes the divorce law. He says, your hearts were hardened under Moses. He more or less says Moses was mean to women. And he said, you can't divorce your wife whenever you feel like it, only if she's cheated on you. That's the only time you can do it. Jesus was very liberal, but he's very conservative in a few areas, and he's very anti-adultery consistently. But in this context, he was saying, you can't throw your wife out ever again because you're bored with her. Now, the right wing take, and Jesus says, male and female, God made them. You marry her, you're with her. He quotes Old Testament. The right wingers take this anti-divorce story. They take the one line, male and female, he made them, and use that to say Jesus is anti-gay and anti-trans, when in reality, he's anti-divorce, and these evil motherfuckers supported Donald Trump.
No, there's no anti-gay or anti-trans stuff in the Bible.
There's anti-gay stuff in the Bible, but it's not come from Jesus.
No.
And
no,
nobody follows the chapters where it appears. Nobody.
No, I mean the Christian Bible. The Old Testament's got horrible, horrible shit in it. God's horrible in it. I mean, it's ripping people's guts out all over the place, telling people that
he does. He is sort of the angry alcoholic step god for much of the Torah. I agree.
Go bring me 1,000 Philistine foreskins. I mean, most men aren't going to stand still and let you take their foreskin. That means that's death. That's killing the guy.
It's true, but it wasn't God who did that. That was King David, right? King David wants the foreskins, not
well,
God.
Well, I thought God told him to do it, or maybe Saul told him to do it. I don't know. Those guys, who knows what really happened, you know?
Oh, no, listen. I mean, that's why we do this with our friends, the God Squad. We talk about our favorite, you know, the fucked up batshit Bible moments, because there's a lot of them in that book.
Yeah.
But having said that, there's also incredible forgiveness and compassion. Jesus bans the death penalty. He commands individuals and nations to provide health care to everyone and to take care of the poor. He says to pay your taxes. He's anti-weaponry. He's anti-violence. I mean, I could go on. The dude does have his good points. I'm not a fan of his fan clubs.
He does, but we have to forgive Donald Trump and not be mad at him if we're going to really follow Jesus. And I don't.
Well, what I struggle with, if you want to really get metaphysical about it, is, and I always ask this of religious people when I talk to them, how do you forgive a person who won't seek forgiveness? The only reason to do it is to heal yourself, right? That's why you forgive, to heal your own pain. But how do you forgive a person who is a staunch douchebag who doesn't think they need forgiveness? I find that a very fun challenge.
I just look at it like
I'm right here, John.
I'm sorry, Chris, but you know what we're talking about.
I can hear you having this
Chris,
call.
I didn't say your name.
Oh,
Baby, don't be like that. Baby, don't be like that.
Right. So you know what? My sheriff was one of the 14 at the Grand Rapids Biden hate fest.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I hope you're...
It set my hair on fire and maybe even my brain, actually. Because I saw it in a local online newspaper that's published by one of my students. And the sheriff actually talked about how Biden didn't support the police, but Trump did.
Yeah, I know. And this is all Trump. This is all Trump 2 days after he promised to pardon all of those cretins who beat the crap out of police on January 6th at our Capitol. I mean, it's just believing Donald Trump. You have to get a lobotomy to believe the man. And I'm sorry, I've got to run, but our guest is ready and I don't keep this man waiting. We are at 866-997-4748. People of Earth, I know you've had a hard week. I know it's been a hard month already. I know right now in New York, we are dealing with floods and earthquakes and eclipses all at the same time. Frogs will be falling from the sky by mid next week. And that is why we have Frank Conniff to bring peace to troubled times. Frank is a comedy writer and performer. Perhaps you watched him performing and writing on the Peabody Award winning series Mystery Science Theater 3000. He was a writer, producer, and actor on ABC's Sabrina the Teenage Witch and a writer and producer on The Drew Carey Show. I have the great pleasure of having worked with this man on TV, on radio, and on stage. People of Earth, whether you can handle it or not, it is TV's Frank. Frank Conniff.
Hey, John.
Hi, Frank. Welcome. It's good to see you.
Good to be here. I just came in. You were talking about some gruesome book filled with horrifying images and bloody stuff. That's some dark shit right there.
Man. Oh, you got to catch it out. It's called The Trump Bible, and it's got a Lee Greenwood quote on it. And it's really actually, you know what The Trump Bible is? It's just the story of Lot having sex with his two daughters repeated over and over again for about 1,000 pages. Mm-hmm.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I haven't read the Bible much, John, but I did on Easter Sunday. I did watch The Robe on Turner Classic Movies.
That's more than most Americans do, so, Frank. And you do have I want to point out, you don't read the Bible, but you do have a master's degree in blasphemy. So, I mean,
I do, and I love blasphemy, and I'm very scholarly in that since I went to Catholic school, which, as you know, is the best training to become a lapsed Catholic that you can have.
I agree. Yes.
And it made me the lapsed Catholic that I am today.
In fairness, it produces a lot of girls who want to punish their dads for, you know, just pointing that out, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weird, weird thing.
I was worried about you earlier today, Frank, because there was quite a summit on Fox News. Will Kane was interviewing The Rock, whose real name is Dwayne Johnson, in case you're an Academy voter. And The Rock came out and said that he regretted that he endorsed Joe Biden publicly 4 years ago. He said Joe Biden has caused all these divisions. He said he doesn't like woke culture. He was saying all the right. Fox never said Donald Trump caused division. Says he regretted endorsing Biden, divisions, woke, and said he's not going to endorse anyone. Frank, I know this is painful for you because I know you care a lot about The Rock's cinematic oeuvre, and I know that he's done so many films that'll be last long beyond him. Films like Black Adam.
Oh, my God.
Some of the Fast and Furiouses. Yeah.
You know what's a really
Rampage.
A terrible Rock movie? And there are some people who are devoted to it, but Southland Tales is just...
Southland Tales.
I don't know if you've ever
seen that. That's almost a drama,
that.
Too. That's almost like a real movie.
It's early in his career and before he was a star. And it's the same guy that did Donnie Darko, which a lot of people love. And it's just incomprehensible. And but you know, Trace Beaulieu has a theory that The Rock is good when he has no hair in a movie. When he has hair in a movie, he's not good.
Yeah. That might be the most scientific take I've heard yet. You know, look, I like Moana. I thought The Rundown was okay. I didn't get to see Rampage or Skyscraper or San Andreas.
Skyscraper has a really original premise. What if Die Hard took place in a high rise building? I don't know if that had ever been done before.
I caught a lot of heat for my jokes about this today, Mr. Conniff, because people were saying, hey, douchebag, The Rock didn't endorse Trump. He just came out and said he wasn't going to endorse Biden.
You know what? In a way, that's worse, I think.
I agree.
To say, you know what? They're both kind of the same. You know, I can't decide, you know, and, you know, with I have to say, I'm always like, you know, big on people have to vote for Biden. But, you know, with what's going on in Gaza and his lack of action in that area, like, it's certainly understandable that people are very down on Biden right now. I totally get it. But what is your alternative to that?
That's
you're not
going to
vote for Biden. And then Trump, who's son-in-law, Jared, just talked about how Gaza is great, underdeveloped oceanfront property. And that's what you want instead, you know. So, I mean, Biden has to stop sending military aid to Israel for sure. But
I agree. These are our choices. The old man who's not doing enough to help Palestine civilians or the old man who wants to see every Palestinian civilian murdered. These are the choices, you know, and it's like you can have the guy who's not doing enough or you can have the guy who wants the Muslim ban. And I'm sorry it sucks so much right now. And I'm very disappointed in this president. But we can't lose sight of the fact that Joe Biden on his worst day, Joe Biden in a coma, Joe Biden with an alien popping out of his chest while he lip syncs Freebird is a better president than Donald Trump on his best day. And this is what we have to deal with.
And the other alternatives are just as bad. RFK Jr. and Jill, whatever her name was.
Yeah,
I'm forgetting. I love that I forgot her name. Jill Stein, is that it?
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Okay.
Let's
you know, and your friend Marianne Williamson, who I know you like as a person, but has no business running for president.
Right, but you keep in mind, Marianne, A, she's dropped out, and B, she was running as a Democrat.
No, she came back in though.
But then she dropped out a second time.
I missed the second dropout.
I have a
hard time keeping track of her grift, you know.
I know. Like my producer Chris in middle school, she dropped out twice. So there's that. But again, I would say Marianne and even Cenk for his very brief presidential run. And even that
Cenk today, I saw a clip. He came out and said that he prefers RFK Jr. over Biden. So
no.
Yes, he did.
He did not say that.
He did say that. Yes, he did.
That's a vote for Trump then. I gotta have him on there talking about it.
Yeah, we need to talk to Cenk about that shit.
But my whole point is they ran as Democrats. They weren't trying to hurt Biden. They ran with the assumption that they were never going to get the nomination. They were going to try and push him on issues, raise awareness, and then endorse him. And so, you know, I have no doubt that Marianne and Dean What's-His-Face has already endorsed Biden. And I thought Cenk would, but I guess we'll have to see.
From what I've heard of Cenk, he's never going to endorse Biden. He's very much on that page of, you know, that Biden is a bigger threat to democracy than Trump, which
I understand. Frank, I want to talk to some of our listeners tonight. We have a lot of people on hold who want to say hello to you. Are you up for meeting some of the evil army of the night?
Of course, as always.
Let me begin with Marie in Chicago on line 7. Marie, good evening and welcome. You're on with TV's Frank.
Yeah, good evening, John. Thank you for taking my call. Also, I want to thank you for the music history you always give. It reminds me of my youth, and the soundtrack of my life is very good.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to talk about Dwayne, The Rock Johnson, and other so-called people of celebrity who use their platforms in such careless and just they realize I'm not a starstruck person, but many people are. And rather than, my mother always said, if you have nothing good to say, don't say anything. And they could take a page out of that book. They can have their own opinions, but they need to be quiet more.
I don't know about that, Marie.
I don't know that I agree. They really don't know what they're talking about.
Well, that's true, but
when they do these types of statements.
Some of them, but when a Bruce Springsteen comes out for Joe Biden, when a Beyonce comes out for Hillary Clinton, I mean, those are things I agree with. So, you know, we have to respect their.
And they should come out in favor of the candidates we don't agree with. That's fine too. I mean, I might end up making fun of them if they come out and support a bad candidate. But I'm just all for them. Even if you're a celebrity, just go ahead and be outspoken. It's not going to really prevent me from going to your movies. I would be happy to go see a James Woods movie if he was still making them.
I feel the same way. If James Woods was in a good movie, I'd go in a second.
Absolutely. He's a great actor. And the fact that maybe he hasn't gotten work because of his political views, which are pretty abhorrent, you know, yeah. I agree with that. But
I would cast him in a movie any day.
I'm the same way. If I was like looking for a villain in a MCU movie or something like
James Woods is maybe the greatest villain in Disney history as Hades and Hercules. He's absolutely hilarious and amazing.
Yeah,
and he's an awful guy in real life, but I would cast him in a second for his talents.
And same thing with comedians there are a lot of comedians that I don't agree with their political stances and I don't, you know, and I end up not watching their Netflix specials, but I firmly believe that there's an audience for them. They should be out there doing their thing. I might say, hey, I hate that you're being that you're punching down towards trans people or whatever with that. I still 100% believe they should have the right to do whatever they want in their comedy and in their opinions.
I agree. Absolutely. And the market will decide, right?
Yeah.
Marie, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Thank you.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but, you know, conservatives say this about liberal artists all the time, to keep your mouth shut. And I don't like it when they say it. I sort of think these people should say whatever they want. I think all of us should feel free to say what we want and keep the dialogue going. And if someone says something ignorant, then they can take the criticism.
No matter what The Rock says, it's not going to stop me from killing time from killing 2 hours with one of his movies when it's streaming in the middle of the night. On some platform.
Really?
What
would it take for you to stop watching an artist's movies? What would they have to do?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
Cosby? Cosby?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's different with each artist. Like Cosby, who was, as you know, a great comedian, but it's ruined now because all of his comedy just seems like a lie now. And it probably always was a lie, but brilliantly done. But still, now that the lie is so apparent.
I mean, the comedy's still great. The comedy's still great.
With Bill Cosby, I would agree that the craft that made that comedy is still incredible. But
he's the best comic I've ever seen.
But watching him, I don't think the comedy is still great. I think in his case, it is affected by all the awful things he's done. I'm not going to sit there for an hour and watch him talk about being a lovable
dad.
That's why
I asked, yeah.
You know,
so I found your line. I found your cutoff line.
But, you know, there's other things like, you know, I will never stop listening to Phil Spector songs, you know. This is a guy that murdered someone. You know, this was all, even before he murdered, he was a horrible human being always.
Yeah.
But the records he produced in the 60s are some of my favorite things of all time. And I'm not going to turn off the Ronettes or the, any of that group, that stuff, the River Deep Mountain High. I'm not going to not listen to that. I'm still going to listen to it and love it. So like I said, it's a different thing. And people still are listening to Michael Jackson, and he was like a pedophile. Yeah. So
Charlie Chaplin married a 16-year-old when he was 35. I mean,
right?
You know, that's.
But I'm still not going to watch all of Monsieur Verdoux. I don't know.
I've never made it through Monsieur Mardou myself, but Limelight holds up. Marie, I so appreciate your call, and I so appreciate the debate it generated. Thank you so, so much. And call anytime. It's really nice to hear from you. We have to take a very quick break, but we'll be back in just a second with your calls. This is SiriusXM Progress. Don't go away.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back on SiriusXM with star of Mystery Science Theater 3000, TV's Frank Conniff, who tweeted today, "If we're going to have earthquakes in NYC, we should also be able to get In-N-Out burgers. Seems only fair." Frank, did you feel it? I was so nostalgic for LA today.
I felt the emergency alert on my phone, which woke me up. I did not feel the earthquake at all, but you know what? I live on the Upper East Side, and the sense around is really bad in this neighborhood.
I understand. Yeah, yeah.
We both lived in LA for so long. This kind of thing is just not a big. And you know what? I was in the Northridge earthquake.
Oh wow!
And which was the big one, and ever since then, my whole thing is. And I've been in a few earthquakes since, is like, if when the earthquake is over, if the power is still on, then everything's okay. Because the Northridge earthquake, that was like the power was off everywhere immediately mm-hmm. afterwards. So you knew, and then everything became kind of apocalyptic. So you knew that was a big deal. But I've never lived through anything like that since, as far as earthquakes go.
Yeah, I didn't meet anyone. I felt it this morning. I was it was 7 minutes before I went on for the Stephanie Miller show. So I was just sitting at my table working, and I thought it was a big truck outside because I just never expect an earthquake here.
Yeah,
rattled. That was about it.
It did give me that kind of LA feeling. So I tried to get someone to reject a screenplay of mine just to.
Oh, that's so great.
The feeling, yeah.
Yeah, I demanded more foam in my latte. I had the same exact vibe. Let's go back to the phones. Rachel is calling from Los Angeles. Rachel, are you okay? Welcome. You're on SiriusXM.
What? You mean because I'm so pissed at The Rock?
Oh, I didn't know you were pissed at The Rock, but what's going on?
Well, The Rock, I'm not that pissed, but I mean, it's very disappointing. He's a total dickwad. I mean, that's, he felt it. The other lady who was on saying that people shouldn't talk or whatever, I don't agree. I agree with you guys. People should speak up. But he does it out of, whatever he's doing is for his own self. And like a few years ago, I think it was like 2 years ago, he was at some award show, and I happened to be listening to Howard, who I don't really listen to. I listen to you guys now, like, or right. Stephanie in the morning because of politics. But okay. Howard made this observation where he says about The Rock, he says, why does he have to have so many muscles? Like, he's just so thick with muscles. Like, he looks ridiculous. You know,
I think it's a personal liberty thing. I gotta say, gotta come down on that side.
Well, he looks silly. He looks crazy. Like his amount of muscles. I think that was a good observation. Like, I think it makes him look bananas. Like,
I'm so glad women feel that way. Speaking as a scrawny pale guy, I'm delighted to hear your sentiments.
I think
Frank?
He's worried about Jake Gyllenhaal, like nipping at his heels. You know, seen him in that new Roadhouse movie. He's like. He's tough as hell.
He's like, whoa. It's like when Joe Piscopo came back one day as America's most muscular comedian. Who's this guy?
You know, that's an important point because...
no, it's not.
Comedians should not should not muscle up like that. It never helps them. The other one who is really muscly,
Dante Nero, when he's all jacked up, it helps him.
And Carrot Top yes. is
oh,
very.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt said to him at one of the Comedy Central roasts, you know, while you were buffing up, I was eating food and writing great jokes.
Are you stressed about politics, Rachel? Are you stressed about the news cycle? Are you stressed about the news cycle?
Well, I'm stressed that there's so much misinformation, and it isn't good when someone like The Rock does that. You're right. I mean, it is like he's endorsing Trump, and it's way too dangerous, and it's like totally, you know, selfish of him, and, you know, all the list of the things that he's endorsing is, you know, shocking.
Yeah.
And the same thing with, you know, I know JFK is crazy. The Cheryl Hines bothers me almost more than JFK.
Yeah.
It's like she's a stain on curves.
Me too. I'm shocked by Cheryl Hines. Shocked. Yeah.
It's bad. Yeah. And the whole JFK thing is bad. You know, I was voting
RFK.
Here at that
RFK. JFK Jr. is not running for office at all.
I mean, the JFK thing was bad, though.
Whatever it was, he's the guy. But I was at the primary, you know, I was doing my vote over here in West Hollywood, and these like hip girls next to me, I overheard them saying to the man, "How do we vote for RFK Jr.?" I was like, "Oh my god!" Like they think they're like hip and groovy or something. I don't know.
That's it. I mean, their RFK's campaign is to get Donald Trump reelected. Tim Mellon of the Mellon family is the number one donor to RFK's PAC and the number one donor to Trump's PAC. That's all you need to know.
It's just
I'm to the point now where I'm worried about Trump tipping the election in RFK Jr.'s favor. Like, I'm more worried about RFK Jr. winning than almost anyone else. I mean, Trump is still the champion, I guess, in terms of who you don't want to win. But RFK Jr. is just one of the most, he's just so fucking reprehensible on every level, you know.
I just don't get it. I've admired him for so many years. I mean, he's been on the show. You met him, Fred. Did you meet him when he came on the show?
Didn't meet him when he was on the show. I was getting vaccinated somewhere, so I wasn't able to do that. He was offended that I was applying medicine and science to my life.
Well, you have to understand, Robert Kennedy is a former heroin addict, so he really cares a lot about you putting needles in your body. You understand?
Yeah, and that's the thing is he went to Harvard and as a legacy admission and screwed up, got terrible grades and continued to succeed in life mainly because of his name. And then he goes and he talks about people like Dr. Fauci, people who really had to work their way up to where they were and talk about how they're wrong. I mean, it's just he's the ultimate privileged nepo baby. And I'm so sick of hating Trump that I'm devoting all my energy now to hating RFK Jr. because
that's got
to
feel refreshing and cleansing. I appreciate your ability you're flexible that way. Rachel, it's going to be okay. I promise it's going to be okay.
Is it?
I promise. Yes.
All right.
I promise. All right. Have a good night. Don't be a stranger. Keep us company. Let's go to Marcia in California on line 7, because I think Frank's Phil Spector call might have hit a nerve. Hi, Marcia. Welcome. You're on Progress.
Well, hello. You know, this happened about 5 decades ago, and I haven't thought about it for a very long time.
What's that?
But after a concert, a debut orchestra, and a bunch of us went and ate at a restaurant. And Phil Spector was there, and he asked us to play. He said, "Are you guys are musicians?" And we took out our instruments. One was a bass player, violist, me. I can't remember if it was a violinist. I think so. And we played for him. I had to have some music. And he was very impressed. He says, I want you to come to this other restaurant and play for, I don't know, Frankie or something. And we piled into his lavender and black Rolls Royce, and he pretty much drove in the middle of the street. It was a little terrifying.
He was a madman,
Anyway, we played again, and afterwards, he wanted to hear us again, and I didn't show up, but the bass player and the violist came and played for him, and they said, somebody pulled a gun on somebody else, and they left. Of course.
Don't get in a car with Phil Spector at all.
If we've learned one thing from the last 25 years, stay out of cars with Phil Spector.
Now you tell me.
The last time it was okay to hang around with Phil Spector was like 1965 or something like that.
Did you see the Al Pacino movie where he played Phil Spector with Helen Mirren?
Terrible movie.
But it's fun watching Pacino go crazy like that.
Yeah.
And you know the true story, Phil Spector really did, when he was producing Leonard Cohen in the 80s, in the studio, he pulled out a gun and he put it to Leonard Cohen's head. This is a true story, in the studio. And he said, Leonard, you know I love you, don't you? You know I love you. And Cohen just looked at him and said, I certainly hope so, Phil. True story. Wow. So you got to meet, you got to play for Phil Spector. Did he seem like a madman?
I was too naive to notice anything like that in those days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Marcia.
I knew a few people in L.A. who, it was almost kind of common to have to kind of run into Phil Spector. Like if you went to Dan Tanna's restaurant or something, like
I heard that too.
He was usually there. And my friend Nick Bakay had some kind of interaction with him while out at night. And, you know, so he got around. But
he got around. All right. Ronnie wrote a book about how much he got around.
And I know people who were friends with Lana Clarkson, and it's another reason why I just hate the mythologizing of him and forgetting his victim, you know, who really had everything taken away from her.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Phil Spector Christmas album is the greatest Christmas album of all time, but I will never play that weird spoken word Phil Spector track. I just listen to the artist and I don't think about Phil when it plays.
Yeah, and Be My Baby, or like this is such
I mean, so many great
songs.
And
he influenced Brian Wilson and, you know, and the Beatles and
John Lennon's best solo music. I mean, George Harrison's best solo music. It's all with Phil. Let me get Lisa in New Mexico before the break. Lisa, thank you for your patience on hold. You are on with TV's Frank.
Did that last person get kidnapped by Phil Spector?
Almost.
No, it was consensual. Christ. It was very consensual.
That's insanity. Okay, I have questions, John, about Sexy Liberal.
Okay, Sexy Liberal is happening. Groper? The first show is a week from tomorrow at the Pantages Theater in Minneapolis.
Yes. Oh, fun. Minneapolis, yay.
Yes.
So,
go ahead.
I bought a really expensive ticket to the Groper Fest or whatever the hell it is.
Fantastic.
Are we the Meet and Grope? Are we the Gropers or the Gropies?
You have the freedom to grope any of the performers you wish, yes.
I don't have the right to grope you, but it allows
a lot of people to grab house sparks. It's very popular.
No, I'm groping you, baby.
Oh, you'll have to fight through the crowd of damaged Catholics that surround me at the meet and greets.
I heard you have groupies.
Damaged Catholics. Isn't that an oxymoron?
No, it's redundancy. It's a redundancy. No, I don't have the groupies. I have the damaged Catholics. Hal Sparks has all the groupies.
No, I doubt
You'll
it.
See. You'll see.
Nope, I heard.
You may have a chance.
Stuff
but good.
Says.
You're going to be next weekend in Minneapolis. Which show are you coming to?
Albuquerque.
Oh, fantastic.
New Mexico.
Yes. Oh, well, listen, I love Albuquerque. We played Pope Joy Hall many times, played the Kino in Albuquerque as well. I haven't been there but right before the pandemic. So I'm so thrilled. It's one of my favorite cities in the country. I can't wait to come.
Okay, let me throw this out there. You guys are doing the whole Hamburger Mary's thing or whatever. We have a doghouse that was on Breaking Bad. I'm just saying we could do like a thing in the afternoon.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. I know all kinds of people who aren't Breaking Bad who are over there. Frank, you wanted to weigh in? Okay.
No, all I said was I've never been to Albuquerque. I've always wanted to go.
The lady that owns that house now does not enjoy company. That's what I know.
What house are we talking about? What house is this?
The White residence from Breaking Bad.
Oh.
The house he throws the pizza on the roof of.
Right. Yeah. The house where the plane crash lands in the pool in the back.
They had to get rid of that off the tour.
The woman who owns it comes out and like curses at you.
Everybody wants to sneak in and put ricin powder inside the sockets. I understand how frustrating it must be for her.
No, they have a whole tour bus. It's like $65 to drive around them, and people were throwing pizza on her house.
So
she was
funny.
Like, no. Thank you very much.
I went to the, on the Petticoat Junction tour. I went to the...
How was that, Frank? Was that good?
Very exciting.
It's great. I'm glad. I went on the Thick of the Night tour, actually, but it was,
my whole career is the Thick of the Night tour.
I can't believe I'm telling Thick of the Night jokes in this century. Lisa, you are fabulous. I look forward to seeing you in Albuquerque, and hopefully I'll be talking to you here before then.
Me too. Bye.
Bye-bye. I will personally chloroform Hal so you can grope him. That's what the ladies seem to like to do. Frank, this week was Marlon Brando's 100th birthday. Do you have a favorite Brando role or film beyond The Godfather and Terry Malloy? Like anything that stands out for you?
Well, Terry Malloy, you know, the On the Waterfront is my favorite Brando movie. And I love The Godfather, of course.
Yeah.
I would say The Freshman is really fun, too.
It is.
And kind of parodying himself.
He's great.
And the thing about Brando, though, is he, after a while, he just didn't give a shit anymore. And he only acted for the money. The whole thing about The Godfather is that he was washed up and they didn't want him. And he really had to work to make that thing work. And it was the first movie he had done in a long time that he was really engaged in, you know, and he actually had fun doing, and he got along with everyone in the cast, and it was a whole renewal for him. But,
And a year later, he did Last Tango, and he looks like a completely different person. You look at how old he looks at age 48, The Godfather, and how just sexy he looks at age 49 for Last Tango in Paris.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I read a biography of him, and he apparently, like in the 60s, he would just say things to directors that he didn't mean about the part, and then he was like testing them, and they'd always just agree with him because they were so intimidated by him. And so when he got to The Godfather, Coppola wasn't like that at all. You know, it was like a whole different thing for him. And
which is why they got to work together in that lovely experience of Apocalypse Now that was so good for both of them health wise.
Yeah. Although he showed up, he's, you know, Colonel Kurtz is supposed to be this badass colonel in the jungle of the Philippines, and here he is showing up like he's like 500 pounds or whatever.
They found the gravy tree in the jungle. Yeah. Yes.
And so Coppola had to shoot
film
it
him
all
in black and film him in darkness.
In darkness, yeah. There's a really good new book out about Coppola that's I forget the name of it. And a lot of it is about him starting Zoetrope. His company, and like he's just so fascinating, you know. He had this really idealistic, utopian version of filmmaking, not just of the movies he made, but he really wanted to transform the business. Ultimately, not successfully, but
And then he made The Rainmaker.
He really is. He's just really amazing.
I agree. Conversation, too. We have time for one really quick call before the break. Let's go to Richie in L.A. Richie, I can give you about a minute. You're on with TV's Frank. What's going on? What's in your brain tonight?
What's in my brain is The Rock was great in Gridiron Gang. And
Okay.
What else? But I think
The Rock has become Kid Rock. Go on.
No, I'm too not athletic enough, and not objectionable enough, not enough Bud Light. But some of these artists, now you just need to keep them doing art so that they don't go get into politics. Charles Manson,
Hitler. If Hitler is stuck
Trump,
to the paints, my God, yes. I hate to agree with you, Richie, but you're exactly right.
Thank you. And keeping it in the family, Jared Kushner, any peace agreement, Jared Kushner should have to sell timeshares for any beachfront property anywhere.
Yes.
Including God.
He'll take you up on that, believe me.
Hey, Richie, thank you for the call. Frank, how can our listeners follow you and keep up with your shows?
Well, my next show is this coming Tuesday. The Mads are back. We're doing an evening of shorts, short films. Go to themadsareback.com or dumb-industries.com. Tickets are only $10. This Tuesday, coming Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Brilliant. Time, it's going to be a blast.
Thank you so much, Mr. Conniff.